to Orphaned Entertainment, the podcast dedicated to public domain and abandoned media. I'm your host, Christopher, and with me is the woman who once shot an elephant in her pajamas. How it got into her pajamas, I have no idea. It's Lydia.
It had to stretch him really, really far.
The elastic waist is the secret.
Yeah.
Thanks to everyone for tuning in to this month's episode. Orphaned Entertainment is available wherever you get your podcasts. And wherever you choose to listen, if you have the option to do so, please rate and review the show. Please follow the link in the show notes to all our social media sites, as well as our YouTube channel, where you can watch many of the films we have covered here on the show. And if you'd like to email us with any comments, suggestions, or feedback on this or any episode, please type or record a message and send it to orphanedentertainment@gmail.com. Speaking of the YouTube channel, just to go back a couple sentences there, this film that we're going to be discussing today, it takes a while for the YouTube bots to understand what public domain, when things fall into public domain. I actually had a fight for this one.
So it just didn't realize that 1929, is it because it's 1929, so it's in public domain? And it didn't? Yeah. Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
it is really interesting to me. My brain rounds up the things that are coming out of copyright to 100 years, but it's not really 100 years.
95, I guess, is what it works out to.
95 years, which is kind of a strange arbitrary number to make things not be under copyright anymore, especially in a society that bases everything on tens.
All right, let's listen to an Ellery Queen 1 minute mystery and a promo for another podcast. And when we return, we will go to 1929 Florida to shake some trees to see if we can't get the coconuts.
Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries. This is Ellery Queen with the case I call the phony promoter. While visiting the site of the upcoming Olympic Games, I met a sporting goods manufacturer who was making a new stock offering. His prospectus showed the equipment for a brand new sport he'd invented. He went on to say he was going to make sure the equipment and the sport caught on because he planned to place the game on the agenda of the Olympic Games. He even had patents on the equipment. But I suggested he drop the idea altogether. In a moment, I'll tell you why.
Greetings! Welcome to Film Gazers, a podcast focusing on the science fiction, horror, fantasy, trinity, and 20th century entertainment. I'm Steph.
I'm Jess. We're cousins / besties. Join us as we reminisce, discuss, and review films from our childhood.
Follow on Instagram @FilmGazers and listen to the show wherever you like to get your podcasts.
Later, taters!
In the case of the phony promoter, no individual can simply place a sport on the agenda of the Olympic Games. The game must be tested by athletes, then accepted by an international body. He lost this game. Listen again to Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries.
Brand new to the public domain, The Coconuts is the first feature-length film of the Marx Brothers, Groucho, Harpo, Chico, and Zeppo. The film also stars Mary Eaton, Oscar Shaw, Margaret Dumont, and Kay Francis. It was adapted from the Marx Brothers' popular stage play of the same name by Maury Riskind, and a number of the songs in the film were composed by Irving Berlin. In the film, Hotel de Coconut, a Florida resort hotel was run by Mr. Hammer, played by Groucho Marx, with the help of Jameson, played by Zeppo. The hotel is struggling with only a few paying customers, like the wealthy Mrs. Potter. Potter's daughter, Polly, is in love with hotel clerk and aspiring architect Bob Adams, but her mother wants her to marry seemingly well-to-do Harvey Yates. Unbeknownst to either of them, Yates is part of a duo of crooks out to steal Potter's diamond necklace. Harpo and Chico arrive at the hotel to do their own brand of thieving, and between all the parties involved, confusion, chaos, and musical numbers ensue. The Marx Brothers shot their scenes during the day at Paramount's Astoria Queens Studios, then rushed off to the 44th Street Theater, where they are performing the musical Animal Crackers. The brothers, upon seeing the final cut of this film, hated it. So much so that they tried to get Paramount to sell them the print so they could destroy it.
Wow.
Luckily for them, Paramount refused, and the film went on to produce a box office take of nearly $2 million.
Wow.
$2 million in 1929.
Yeah.
Yikes. No single complete print exists of the film. What was released on home video and what is available today is comprised of three different copies, which explains the varying quality in sound and visibility. You've probably noticed that while you were watching, that certain scenes would suddenly go kind
blurry.
Of dark and scratchy, and then others
yes.
look really nice. Yeah,
absolutely.
The Marx Brothers were a vaudeville stage family: Chico, Harpo, Groucho, Gummo, and Zeppo. Leonard Joseph Chico Marx was the eldest of the brothers. Adolf Harpo Marx was born thereafter. Julius Henry Groucho Marx. And then Milton Gummo Marx. And the youngest being Herbert Manfred Zeppo Marx. Gummo was not in any of the movies, and Zeppo appeared in the first five films in relatively non-comedic roles. The brothers were from a family of artists, and their musical talent was encouraged from an early age. Harpo learned to play an estimated six different instruments throughout his career. He became a dedicated harpist, which gave him his nickname. Chico was an excellent pianist, Groucho a guitarist and singer, and Zeppo a vocalist. Groucho's debut was in 1905, mainly as a singer. By 1907, he and Gummo were singing together in The Three Nightingales with Babel O'Donnell. The next year, Harpo became the fourth Nightingale, and by 1910, the group briefly expanded to include their mother Minnie and their aunt Hannah, and the troupe was renamed the Six Mascots. During a 1912 performance in Nacogdoches, Texas, a runaway mule outside the theater interrupted the performance. The audience hurried out to see what was happening. Groucho was angered by this, and when the audience returned, he made snide comments at their expense, including, "Nacogdoches is full of roaches, and the jackass is the flower of Texas."
Wow.
Instead of becoming angry, the audience actually laughed, and the family realized that it had the potential as a comic troupe.
That is so funny.
Over the next several years, they developed more comedy routines. By 1917, the brothers had begun to develop their characters. Groucho began to wear his trademark grease paint mustache and to use a stooped walk. Harpo stopped speaking on stage and began to wear a red fright wig and carrying a taxicab horn. Chico started speaking with a fake Italian accent, while Zeppo adopted the role of the romantic. By the 1920s, the Marx Brothers had become one of America's favorite theatrical acts with their sharp and bizarre sense of humor, and they became famous for their improvisational comedy. The Marx Brothers stage shows became popular just as motion pictures were evolving to talkies, and they signed a contract with Paramount Pictures. Their first two released films were adaptations of the Broadway shows The Coconuts and Animal Crackers in 1930. Production then moved to Los Angeles, where their third film, Monkey Business, was filmed, the first of their films not based on a stage play. Horse Feathers came in 1932, in which the brothers satirized the American college system and prohibition, and that film won them the cover of Time magazine.
Wow.
The film included a running gag from their stage work in which Harpo produces an array of props from inside his coat, including a wooden mallet, a fish, a coiled rope, a tie, a poster of a woman in her underwear, a cup of hot coffee, a sword, and just after Groucho warns him that he can't burn the candle at both ends, a candle burning at both ends.
Wow.
After their contract with Paramount expired, Zeppo and Gummo left the act to become agents. The two built one of the biggest agencies in Hollywood, working with the likes of Jack Benny and Lana Turner. The remaining Marxes signed with MGM. Their first film with the studio was A Night at the Opera in 1935, and followed with 1937's A Day at the Races. In a 1969 interview, Groucho claimed that the two films made with MGM at that time were the best they ever did. After a short stint with RKO Pictures, they returned to MGM to make three more films, At the Circus, Go West, and The Big Store. By now, it was 1941, and the brothers announced that they were retiring from the screen. though several years later, Chico convinced them to make two more films to help alleviate some serious gambling debt. 1946's A Night in Casablanca and 1949's Love Happy. From the 1940s onward, Chico and Harpo appeared separately and together in nightclubs and casinos. Chico fronted a big band, the Chico Marx Orchestra, with 17-year-old Mel Torme as a vocalist.
Wow.
Groucho made several radio appearances during the 1940s and starred in You Bet Your Life, which ran from 1947 to 1961 on NBC radio and television. He authored several books, including Groucho and Me in 1959, Memories of a Mangy Lover in 1964, and The Groucho Letters in 67. All the brothers appeared together on screen for the last time in 1957 for an early incarnation of The Tonight Show called Tonight, America After Dark. And 5 years later, Groucho made a guest appearance on The Tonight Show to introduce its new host, Johnny Carson.
Wow. My entire contribution to this episode is just going to be saying, wow, in various levels of impressed.
Now, this is actually the first Marx Brothers movie that I have watched. I don't know why, but the Marx Brothers were just a gap in my kind of movie knowledge. Do you have any history with them at all?
I feel like I have seen, like, a lot of the names of the movies that you were listing off are familiar, like Horse Feathers. And I don't know if that's because I saw them at some point or saw clips of them at some point, or like back in like the 80s and 90s, they would do specials on like AMC and TCM, like This Is Hollywood, and there were a couple of them like that. And they would go back and they would list out all of these films and show you short clips and stuff like that. So I wonder, like, obviously I've seen clips of Groucho Marx, who hasn't? But as far as seeing a whole feature-length film with them, I don't know that I have. And I thought they were, I always categorized them with other kind of slapstick comedians, like, and I'm completely drawing a blank right now, darn it, the tall, skinny one in the
Laurel and Hardy.
Thank you, Laurel and Hardy. I can't believe I couldn't remember that. But I always categorized them with like slapstick, like Laurel and Hardy and the Three Stooges. And that humor, I had seen the Three Stooges and I'd seen some Laurel and Hardy. And Laurel and Hardy is, I would say, closer to the Marx Brothers. There's more verbal comedy, but I just never have been drawn to slapstick. And so I think I just kind of skipped the Marx Brothers expecting it to be that genre that I didn't really feel drawn to. And so I feel like obviously everybody knows who Groucho Marx is. Almost everybody, I should say. Probably not kids these days. But I don't think that I've seen like a full-length film of them. And so this was an interesting experience for me because it wasn't really what I was expecting.
Much the same way, I don't think you can go through life and not know or not see references to Groucho Marx, at least our generation anyway. You know, maybe generation that has followed us, maybe not. But I remember watching MASH episodes where Hawkeye would go around pretending he was Groucho Marx.
Yes.
I remember watching Looney Tunes and there was Groucho Marx references.
There's a reference in Goonies.
Is there?
Yeah, when they break the statue and he says, that's my mom's most favorite piece. And Mouth goes, I wouldn't be there if it wasn't. He like it's like a chip or something in his hand. And yeah, it's totally, totally identifiable.
Yeah, okay. And then, yes, I've seen clips. I've actually seen a few episodes of You Bet Your Life. I remember seeing Groucho Marx appear on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson as a guest.
Yeah.
I've seen the I Love Lucy with Harpo Marx,
mm-hmm.
where they do the mirror gag.
Oh, I haven't seen a lot of I Love Lucy.
Oh, okay. But outside of that, I haven't seen anything
like an actual
film
of them. Yeah.
Or even, frankly, I don't know if I've even seen really much in the way of like full clips
right.
from their films or anything.
Right.
I've really only know them tangentially from other references. So I was kind of really excited to sit down and watch their first, you know, their first film.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was so interesting. I mean, obviously, they get name dropped as influences for comics for the next 100 years.
Oh, yeah.
And there are many times, even in this film, where I'm watching that and I'm thinking, man, that sounds a lot like an Abbott and Costello sketch.
Oh, there! I can't tell you the number of times that Harpo Marx, I was like, he looks just like Martin Short. He looks just like Martin Short.
Yes, no,
Martin
he does.
Short looks like him.
Yes. I only just now thought of that. When you said, I'm like, oh my God, you are very right. If you could like build a little, your own, like make a Marx Brothers biopic and who you're going to cast, Martin Short would make a perfect Harpo.
Perfect Harpo. Absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, but there's also, you know, facial expressions and reactions and things that you didn't realize this is the source of.
I haven't read this, but I can't think that it didn't happen. How much Abbott and Costello, who I'm a big fan of, had to go back and pick up from watching the Marx Brothers. Because you think, well, the Marx Brothers happened 20 years before them. They're growing up as kids watching the Marx Brothers.
It. Exactly.
And there's some scenes between Groucho and Chico, and they're having their little play on words and everything. I'm thinking, my God, this is who's on first.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, it's a very iconic style of humor. And it's funny that it's such an iconic style of humor, and we're like, oh, I've never seen this before.
It's terrible. I feel guilty.
What kind of a film podcaster am I?
Oh, I love classic films. You seen the Marx Brothers? No.
Nope.
you said this wasn't like you were expecting. I have to admit a little bit of the same thing. Just before we sat down and started recording, I mentioned to you that I kind of missed the fact that this was like a musical. And it's very much is. It almost feels like, I mean, it's based on their stage play. It really feels like this is their stage play and it just happens to be filmed.
Yeah, I mean, the camera work is reasonably good. It's not filmed like a stage play filmed, but the direction and the action is a lot like a stage play. And there's a lot of cheating toward the camera, like in a stage play, but it's not just a static one shot kind of thing.
No, they changed the shots, but the shots themselves are a little static, and that is because this is in the very early days of talkie films.
Right.
And the cameras are very noisy, and to try to cut down on the noise, the cameras were effectively in a soundproof glass
box. Yes.
So they had to be pretty much locked down. And so, yes, you might have shots from three different cameras, but you're going to have, here's this camera shot and it's not going to move.
Right.
And then it's going to cut to this camera shot and it's not going to move.
But we open with a plethora of different angles of ladies in swimsuits.
Oh,
1920s swimsuits.
If you are a fan of women's legs, this is the film for you.
I legitimately didn't notice, but I noticed every style of swimsuit that they have, and it's great. It's fantastic. These are 1929 swimsuits, and they're like essentially tank tops and biker shorts.
Oh, it does. It opens. It's almost like a fashion parade for swimwear.
Yes. Yeah. And this is where I think, and it opens up with music, and then you get a whole, I don't even know the term for it, because they're laying on the sand doing, it's synchronized swimming in the air. it's
choreographed movements.
Choreographed. Yes. Thank you. Choreography. Laying on the sand, all doing choreography. And it's probably, 20, 25 women identically attired in swimsuits, in 1920s swimsuits, you know, and we get that revisited a few times throughout the film, where you obviously have a chorus. It's It's not the MGM girls, but by any stretch, but you definitely, you'd have this group of ladies that are doing choreographed dance periodically through it, which is interesting too, because of course I always go back to like the Ziegfeld shows and I would expect it there, but I didn't think of it as being something that would be included in stage productions at this point. We've lost that, I think. There, unless it is a very much in-your-face musical, and gosh, watching the Thanksgiving Day parades last year, there's almost no synchronized choreography. There's almost no synchronized dance. Everybody's kind of doing their own thing, and they're all off on their... We have the Rockettes, and they're still, of course, dancing, you know, in synchronization, but... Now, modern choreography is every person has to have like their own kind of movement. And so we've lost all of this like real drill sergeant, those real drill dances. We watched a Chorus Line randomly, totally just don't know why we even turned it on. But it was interesting because they are pointing out, like, even at that point, like, to be in the chorus, you have to be perfectly in sync with everybody else, the head motions, the leg motions, the arm motions. And there's some really good examples of that in this movie, including some just hand padding, knee padding. I don't know how to describe it, but it goes on for a while. And it's so fun to be watching that and think... People in 1929 watching this must have just been like, whoa, it was the step up of their day. And they're going, this is amazing. Wow. I can't believe they're all so perfectly in sync. You know, it's fun to see it, but it's very dated. Very, very dated.
Just a little bit. It is a product of its time. It is 1929, folks.
Yes.
No, yeah. The dance numbers really were impressive because you can't help but kind of watch, and you're trying to find the one that's not in sync.
Yes.
And I'll be damned if you could find them.
I found the one that wasn't smiling, but I couldn't find one that wasn't in sync.
There was one girl sitting on the steps doing the patty cake kind
of thing.
Bottom
left corner.
Yes.
I know. she was like serious into it and everybody else is smiling.
She had a very unique look on her face. I don't know what you call it. Yeah, but yes. That was funny.
Focused.
Very focused. Maybe that look. Was it.
Yeah, that was the only number I noticed that on.
I am not here to have fun.
No, I'm going to match everybody else perfectly. Yeah, it was interesting. I caught her on my second or third watch through at one other point in the movie. And her face pretty much looked the same then too.
I'm here to do a job.
Yes. So yeah, it is a musical, and there is the main song in it enters pretty early in the film.
Sunny Florida, sunny Florida, by the sea. Sunny Florida, sunny Florida, all the sunshine is wonderful. Live in Florida, you will see. When they're breaking a song, they're breaking a song.
Well, we do get the, now I don't remember if the dance, if the bellhop dance comes before or after that.
After. That one's
okay,
after.
It is after. Okay. I was trying to remember. And it feels like it's a song that I've heard before, but we watched a movie a while back called Smiling Through. And there's a line in the song where he says, and I'll be smiling through. And I thought, did the movie come from the song or did the song come from the movie? I don't know.
When my dreams come true, and I'll be smiling through, when my dreams come true, that vanished castle I built in my mind will be a love nest from a practical form. And I my dreams come true.
I don't know. Well, this one was the big song was When My Dreams Come True.
Mm-hmm.
So close.
Yeah. Well, and there is a line in the song that says, "And I'll be smiling through when my dreams come true."
Oh, okay, I see.
And so I was curious if this was, and I was trying really hard to remember if that was something that we had, if there was a song in it or not, because this song sounded familiar to me.
Hmm. Well, I mean, it is an Irving Berlin tune, so it might be something that carried through, or he built on it, you know, for another production or something like that. So. Who knows? I noticed it is the 1929 where everyone sings with that little bit of like vibration in their voice, with that little
the vibrato. And I'll be smiling through. Ooh, yes.
Male or female, they've all got it.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I don't remember the actor who plays Bob, what his name is, but he has a very, again, it's a product, like you said, it's a product of the time. It's a very dated way of singing, but he has a really nice voice. Both the singers in this have really nice voices. Unfortunately, Polly, the lead love interest, has also a very 1929s voice. It's very Snow White, like that kind of pitch that we think of.
Oh, when will I realize?
Oscar Shaw is Bob, and Mary Eaton is Polly.
Okay.
And yes, they are very 1920s, both of them. His voice is very good. But yes, we get their song and number, and then, yeah, we don't get introduced to any of the Marx Brothers until after the montage and after the song, and then we finally meet Groucho Marx as the proprietor of this hotel.
We want to see you, Mr. Hanna.
What's the matter? Somebody pay their bill?
We want money.
Yes, money.
You want your money?
We want to get paid.
Oh, you want my money. Is that fair? Do I want your money? Suppose George Washington's soldiers had asked for money. Where would this country be today?
But they did ask.
And where's Washington? No, my friends, no. Money will never make you happy. And happy will never make you money. That might be a wise crack, but I doubt it.
We want our money.
I'll make you all a promise. If you'll all stick with me and work hard, we'll forget about money. Let's get together. We'll make a regular hotel out of this place. I'll put writing paper in the hotel. And next year, if you behave yourself, I'll put in envelopes. I'm going to put extra blankets free in all your rooms. There'll be no cover charge.
Hooray!
Think of the opportunities here in Florida. 3 years ago, I came to Florida without a nickel in my pocket. Now I've got a nickel in my pocket.
That's all very well, Mr. Hammer. We haven't been paid in 2 weeks, and we want our wages.
Wages? Do you want to be wage slaves? Answer me that.
No.
No, of course not. But what makes wage slaves? Wages. I want you to be free. Remember, there's nothing like liberty, except Collier's in the Saturday Evening Post. Be free, my friends, one for all and all for me, and me for you, and three for five, and six for a quarter.
That's actually a nice, fun, and that's where some of the, you know, the wordplay.
Oh, yes.
The wordplay comes in immediately.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a lot of clips in this episode.
the verbal banter and the jokes in here, especially from Groucho, are so fast. And the first version of this that I watched is a... It's on another YouTube channel, but it has the subtitles integrated.
Oh,
and they
nice.
Are very well done.
Oh, good,
and I'm
good, good.
Grateful for that, because that was the first watch of it that I had. If I had been struggling to understand what they were saying through this whole movie, I would have had, I think, a really different experience. Because the sound comes in and out a little bit, I found subtitles very helpful. But they also, I think, increase the humor for me, because if you miss the punchlines of the jokes, you're... still trying to figure out what he said just a second ago, so you missed the next one. They come so fast, you don't have a second to recover.
Oh, very fast. And there are a few that are very much of the time.
Yes.
And so you're sitting there and you're trying to piece it together. What could that possibly mean? And then you realize you've missed the next two lines.
Yes. Yes.
I actually had to one. There was one where Groucho is talking to Chico and he's showing him the map and showing him all, you know, the coconut acres or whatever. And
here's Coconut Manor. No matter what you say, this is Coconut Manor. Here's Coconut Manor. Here's Coconut Heights. That's a swamp. And right over here where the road forks, that's Coconut Junction.
Where you got Coconut Costa?
All right, that's on one of the forks. You probably eat with your knife, so you won't have to worry about that. Now, here is the main road leading out of Coconut Manor. That's the road I wish you were on. Now, over here, on this site, we're going to build an eye and ear hospital. This is going to be a site for sore eyes. You understand?
That's fine.
Now, right over here, this is the residential section.
Oh, so people live there, huh?
No, that's the stockyards. Now, all along here, this is the riverfront. And all along the river, those are all levees.
That's the Jewish neighborhood?
Well, we'll pass over that. You're a peach boy.
And at one point he says that over here, that now these are the levees. And Chico says, oh, that's the Jewish neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I looked at my wife, Levi's.
Yes.
Oh, it's a big...
Yeah. Well, and then the next thing that Groucho says is, we'll just pass over that. And I went, oh, my Lord.
Yeah, and then it all...
Wow.
As soon as my wife said that, you know, Levi's, it's a big family, you know, Jewish name.
Yeah.
Then that whole... The whole two, three lines there, like that. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, they're just one after another references. They're talking about the viaduct, and he says, why a duck? Because he's got the accent. And he's like, why not chicken? This is the thing about this movie, and I'm maybe jumping the gun sharing this right now, but maybe not. The thing about this movie was every time that I started feeling like the joke was starting to drag on, fire breathing. Anyway, sorry. This is a product of watching this movie. But every time I felt like the jokes were starting to drag, then something would flip. They'd change something. They'd add another thing to it. So early on, we have Harpo just eating everything. And at one point, he is drinking from an inkwell. And he takes a bite of a phone and chews it. And it's just like... Obviously, it's a very visual gag, but there's all of... Well, Harpo doesn't speak, so actually, I think he says one word in this movie.
No, he's silent through the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. There was a moment where I thought, did he just say something? So maybe I hallucinated it. But there's even a part, like it's so minor, where they're leaning on the front desk, and he just flicks his hand and... throws a knife into the front of the desk and rests his foot on it. And it's this, I don't even know what to think of it, because he's like this harmless kind of bum character. He's like mostly clown. Mm. But then he multiple times through this movie starts playing music. He plays on a piano, he plays on a harp, he plays a clarinet, and is an excellent, excellent musician on all three of those instruments. And then he throws a knife into a desk too and rests his foot on it. Like, it's just, you just don't know what's going to happen next with this character. And usually I would feel like it's too over the top and irritating, which was the very first kind of feeling I had. But then as it keeps going, you're kind of like just so baffled by it that it's captivating, and it is funny, but it's also just captivating. They just always know when to change the joke up just to surprise you.
Yeah, when Chico and Harpo first come onto the set or come onto the scene, yeah, much like you just said, I kind of went, man, I'm not going to like these two.
Right.
You know, they were just really over the top and being really kind of rude and crass and this is like you were talking like Three Stooges, like,
yes,
you know, and I'm thinking, oh, And that kind of settles down fairly quickly through, it doesn't carry on through the whole film. It's pretty much their entrance is just chaos.
Yes.
And then it settles down for the rest of the film. And then, as you said, they each kind of go off and do their own thing. And I had no idea about the musical talents of the Marx Brothers.
Me neither.
Yeah, you got this guy that is just a clown who's constantly like taking people's hands and putting his leg on them, you know, and then he sits down and he plays this harp and it's like, what just happened?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Chico does the same thing with the piano. And I was mesmerized watching his hands as he played the piano. Because it wasn't just, he didn't just play the piano. He was playing as he played the piano.
Yes. You know,
this is an audio podcast. You can't see or whatever, but the way his hand just kind of goes down the keys and it would go upside down and almost like finger gun, bing, the
yes.
last key. Like, I'm blown away. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, and I think we're in an era right now where when somebody sits down at a piano and, quote, plays the piano in a movie, you see them across the piano and you never see their hands. And there's a level of, we know that that person probably isn't playing the piano. And so to be able to see, and we've seen vaudeville-esque performances where it's a gimmick. And I think the thing that's so surprising to me in this movie about this group is that they didn't, even though there is obviously a gimmick, it's very much a gimmick, you don't feel like it's, I guess, a cheap gimmick. It feels like these are actually really incredibly talented people that have probably no business dressing like a drifter and behaving like a clown and honking a horn. Because their talents are just so far beyond that. And there are moments, too, where you can really tell by the reaction of the other person in the scene, like where Groucho goes off and starts doing the wordplay stuff, and the other person is trying to keep up. And there's an amount of them reacting like they're supposed to. But I think there's also an amount of them just saying, what the heck did he just say? Like, I don't even know how to respond to this because it's so fast. And it's just, I also am struggling to know what I'm supposed to say about it. But they're incredibly talented. And it doesn't feel like a sideshow gimmick. It feels like there's actually real skill involved here, not just slapstick.
Yeah, very much. And there's times where if it's not, I feel like maybe it's at some point it started out with somebody ad-libbing, maybe on the stage or something. But whether they did so on the film, maybe, maybe not. But there's times where it comes across so natural that you think, well, that could be an ad-lib. And you're, but these guys are so talented, you wouldn't know. Is it scripted? Is it ad-libbed? No idea. Because they just, whoever it is, whichever one it is, they just carry it and they go with it. They're unflappable.
Yeah. I ran across a clip online that claimed that there's a point where Zippo and Harpo are trying to break Bob out of jail. Mm-hmm. And they walk in to explain to him what's going on. And that's, I think, the one scene in the movie where it feels like there are some lines flubbed. And I found a clip online that claimed that they actually did flub the lines, that he's supposed to say, you know, she's marrying the wrong guy and supposed to give his name at that point and doesn't. And I think it was interesting because that was the one part in the movie where I was watching it and I thought, this feels a bit like they didn't write this script. It feels a bit like they're just making this up, because the one guy actually, Bob actually prompts Zippo with the name of the other character. So whether or not that was actually flubbed and they just kept it in because they figured it wasn't a big enough deal to try and go back and refilm it, you know, we will probably never know unless it's in somebody's memoir somewhere. But even though it's possible that a lot of this is ad-libbed, most of it doesn't feel just straight up ad-libbed. And obviously, like you said, it's from a stage play, so it's not.
Yeah, it's well-rehearsed ad-lib.
Yeah, and the things that we've seen in the past that I think have kind of frustrated us have been, like the kind of Ziegfeld shows and things like that, the stage shows. I think those have been ones where they are more ad-libbed and they feel more ad-libbed. And unless the two people are just really on top of it, that very rarely works. We, you know, we're obsessed these days with, oh, this line wasn't scripted and it worked so well in the movie. But inevitably, that is one line, right? It's not a whole scene. There's so much thought that goes into all of the jokes that Groucho makes and all of his interactions with people. And you almost, it's almost a monologue most of the time. He almost doesn't need somebody to respond to him, but you always have to have the straight person on the other side for the comic to act off of. So it's very interesting. I feel like if I don't go back and say, hey, slapstick does require skill, I'm just going to get lambasted by somebody. They're going to say, slapstick's really hard. I know slapstick is hard. This is just, it just doesn't feel like slapstick, even though there is an amount of physical comedy in this.
It's a little verbal slapstick versus physical.
Yes.
Of all the lines that Groucho throws out, there was one early on that I just thought was really funny because it was just so kind of bizarre. He's talking to Mrs. Potter.
How do you do, Sam?
Why don't you whistle at the crossing? You're just the woman I'm looking for. And now, whether you like it or not, I'm going to tell you about Florida real estate. It's the first time it's ever been mentioned down here today.
I'm sorry, but I'm
Do you know that property values have increased 1929 since 1,000%? Do you know that this is the biggest development since Sophie Tucker? Do you know that Florida is the show spot of America and Coconut Beach is the black spot of Florida?
You told me about this yesterday.
I know, but I left out a comma. Look, in a little while, we're going to hold an auction sale at Coconut Manor. It's a vibe terrible. Beautiful. You must come over. There's going to be entertainment, sandwiches, and the auction. If you don't like auction, we can play a contract. Here it is, Coconut Manor. 42 hours from Times Square by railroad. 1,600 miles as the crow flies. 1,800 as the horse flies. There you are, Coconut Manor, glorifying the American sewer and the Florida sucker. Why, it's the most exclusive residential district in Florida. Nobody lives there. And the climate. Ask me about the climate, I dare you.
Very well.
I'm glad you brought it up. Our motto is Coconut Beach. No snow, no ice, and no business. Do you know that Florida is the greatest state in the Union?
Is it?
Take its climate. No, we took that. Take its fruits. Take the alligator pear. Take all the alligator pears and keep them. See if I care. Do you know how alligator pears are made?
Haven't the slightest idea.
There you are. That's because you've never been an alligator. And don't let it happen again. You know that it sometimes requires years to bring the pear and the alligator together? They don't like each other.
No?
No. Do you know how many alligator pears are sent out of this state every year and told not to come back?
I don't think I do.
All they can get a hold of. Florida feeds the nation, but nobody feeds me, and that's what I want to talk to you about.
Mr. Hammer.
Another thing. Take our cattle raising. I don't mean anything personal, but here is the ideal cattle raising section. We have longhorns, shorthorns, and shoehorns.
Mr. Hammer, will you let me say something, please?
I hardly think so, and there's something else I want to bring to your mind. Where will you be when you're 65? That's only about 3 months from now.
If I were to buy, I should prefer some place like Palm Beach.
Palm Beach? The Atlantic City of yesterday, the slums of tomorrow. Do you know that the population of Coconut Beach has doubled in the past week?
Has it?
Three bulldogs were born. We're expecting a nanny goat in the morning.
Well, I know, but I left out a comma.
Yeah. There's so many lines in this. Honestly, there's so many lines in it that he says that it's impossible to pick one and say, this is the line that really stood out in this movie. He says, imagine we find a little bungalow. Well, of course we could find a bungalow, but what if it's not empty? What if we can't convince him to leave? Like, and it's things like that. He just keeps going and going. And every time you think, oh, that was a funny line, then he says another line where you're like, oh, no, that was the funny line. Where we can, what does he say? Where we can bill and cow together instead of bill and coo. And then he says, no, it's bull and cow. And he just goes on and on. That whole scene with her, it makes me chuckle.
You're at the bungalow and I come for work. No, I'm at the bungalow and you come home. Yeah, that's better.
Yeah. Let's say you're inside and I'm outside trying to get in. No, wait, I'm inside trying to get out. And he just keeps going and going. And it is this feeling of, if I were trying to have a serious conversation with this person and he was going on like this, it would be so maddening. But it is actually really funny in the movie, in the context. So I feel like we could keep gushing about what he says.
Yeah, and that's with Mrs. Potter's play by Margaret Dumont. And she starred in many of the films as pretty much the same character, the same type of character or whatever. And Groucho Marx, in an interview sometime later, just gushed about her and said, oh, she was practically the fifth Marx brother.
Yeah. She is excellent. And I know this is their first movie, but I had multiple points where I thought, how is she not cracking up? If I was sitting in her seat looking at this man saying this stuff, I would be laughing my head off because it's so ridiculous and so over the top. And she manages to keep it very, very straight.
Yeah, it's really impressive. Pretty much everyone around them, at some of the stuff that happens. When the hotel security guy shows up to the costume party and they steal his dickie, his shirt.
Just as I thought. You birds are all in on this thing and you're all trying to keep me from finding my shirt.
That's a lie, you whelp. Whelp, 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 whelp.
I want my shirt.
He wants his shirt.
I want my shirt.
He wants his shirt.
He wants his shirt.
I want my shirt.
He wants his shirt.
I want my shirt.
He wants his shirt.
I want my shirt. I want my shirt. I'm not
to
be happy without my shirt.
He wants his shirt. He wants his shirt. He wants to be happy without his shirt.
I want my shirt.
He wants his shirt. He wants to be happy without his shirt.
He wants his shirt.
He wants his shirt. He won't be happy.
And they bust into this song and everyone is singing. It's like, how are they doing this? It is so ridiculous.
That is a perfect example of where things started to kind of go off the rails. And he's like, I want my shirt back. And I'm like, okay, like, we get it. Come on, move on with the scene. And then they start singing, he wants his shirt back. And I was like, and immediately, of course, recognizing the tune. Couldn't tell you what the song is, but you'll know it the second you hear it. And I thought, oh, that actually, there's a purpose to the stupidity of the scene leading up to this song, where there's so many of the, not so many, but some of the films we've watched in the past, there will be a scene like that where the guy's like, I want my shirt back. He wants a shirt back. You know, I want my shirt back. He wants a shirt back. And then it never goes anywhere. And in this movie, it always goes somewhere.
It goes to Carmen.
It goes, but every scene is like that. You kind of start to think, this is getting a little repetitive, a little monotonous, but then it actually leads into something. So I think that's the thing that I probably noticed when I was younger about comedy is my favorite comedians are ones that they'll start off and they'll tell you a joke and everybody kind of chuckles at it. And then they'll go on and they'll tell some other jokes. But then the culmination is when they tie all the different jokes together. And that's when it's hilarious. That's excellent stand-up. And that's essentially what they do over and over in this movie is they give you a little tidbit, but then they kind of come back and link it again. And it works for me. It worked for me way, way, way more than I expected this movie to work for me as soon as I realized it was Marx Brothers, because I was expecting it to be the Three Stooges, and it's not.
And we've talked a lot about just their performances in this film and haven't talked much in the way of, like, what the plot was. And, you know, honestly, I don't think the plot mattered. It really was. This film was made to showcase the Marx Brothers and their performances. And it is, as I said earlier, like them recording one of their stage plays, or it's recording a live performance. There's even the moment when Chico sits down to the piano and he's playing the piano, he's turning and kind of, you know, smiling to the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And that moment, both Harpo's harp solo and Chico's piano solo, there's no reason for it to be there plot-wise.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like an interlude. Mm-hmm. It's like someone's off changing the set.
Yes.
And so you got to keep the audience occupied.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's a perfect analogy for it. And it's funny because at first I thought, why is this clown sitting down at a piano? Why is this clown sitting down at the harp? But then, because he dresses a little bit like, you know, a clown. But then when he starts playing, you totally forget all of that. And I think you're exactly right that even though the plot doesn't, almost doesn't matter for their performance, it's actually not a bad plot. Like, there's more complexity to it than you might expect. And it certainly isn't enough. The way that it's produced, there's not enough plot to fill a movie. But this is an hour and a half. And a lot of the movies we're watching from this era are an hour or an hour and 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so even though we have a whole lot of musical numbers included in it, the length of the movie is pushed out to kind of accommodate that. And there is actually a plot. It's not just them running around making jokes. There is actually a plot going on through the whole thing.
If you had told this story without the comedy bits and without the musical numbers, if you had just told the story about the woman that wants to marry the guy, but her mom doesn't think he's good enough for her, and there's crooks trying to steal the necklace, that is your 60-minute movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I'm sure we've seen films like that probably in 11 years.
Yeah, definitely. And not bad ones even, just very straightforward, you know, simple cut movies.
And yeah, and I think that actually would have kind of been boring if that had been the film.
The story I think is interesting. I think that if it were acted and directed the way that it is, yes, this movie would be boring. There's no suspense to it at all. They tell you walking right in who everybody is, who's the bad guy, who's the good guy, who's going to end up together at the end. I think probably Polly's mom is maybe the wild card in there, where she obviously needs to be there, but she doesn't need to be as entertaining as she is in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe it's not even so much that she's entertaining as that she is the prop for so much of the entertainment that happens. I think you could make this story a good, entertaining, interesting story, and you could write it out and make it a decent full-length movie without all of the comedy bits. But even if you took them out of it entirely, then you lose a whole extra subplot of Harpo and Zippo being in and out of the rooms, and then Chica finding out about the plot and being able to resolve things the way that things resolve, which of course they have to, because whether or not we realize that they're the heroes in this movie, we might think Bob's not the hero in this movie.
No. And in the end, the end of the film and the solution is all very, I mean, you go through this whole film, you said it's an hour and a half. Well, an hour and 25 minutes, it goes and goes and goes and goes. And then it's like last 5 minutes. And the solution is this.
Yes. Yep. And it's a reasonably good solution. If you can, you know, Agatha Christie would, you know, probably not necessarily put it out as a book, but it's a reasonable solution. It's not just how did you know? Oh, because somebody that we've never heard of in the past 65 minutes saw it, and now we're pulling them out, you know, out of our back pocket. But there is a plot, and there's a lot of entertainment, and the entertainment definitely overwhelms the plot. But I don't think that either one detracts from the other to the point where it's a problem.
Should we, do you have anything else you wanted to talk about, or can we just go ahead and go to the ratings?
I think the only thing I need to say is at first I was pretty sure I wasn't going to like what was happening on screen. Not at first, but like you said, when Zippo and Harpo came in, I kind of thought, oh boy,
Chico,
here we go.
Chico,
thank you. I'm sorry.
Zeppo is the guy that is in no costume. He's in a suit behind the counter.
You know, I'm sorry. I keep saying, right. It is Chico. Sorry about that. When they came in, I kept thinking, oh no, here we go, right? And by the end of this movie, I think I have a bit of a crush on Harpo. There's just, there, you know, there just are a few scenes in here where I go, Oh. All right. Yeah. And on that note, no pun intended.
Honk.
Pun intended.
After the first time I watched this film, certainly when I went into the film, as you said, I thought, I'm going to be the bad guy because I'm not going to like a Marx Brothers movie. At the end of the first watch, I found like, well, you know, it was fun. It had some fun little bits and there was some stuff that I really liked. And I honestly kind of found myself kind of tapping toes to some of the song and dance and enjoyed watching the piano and, you know, that, you know, some of that stuff and everything. The second time I watched it, I find myself enjoying it a bit more, maybe because I just knew what I was getting myself into on the second watch. And the more I thought about it, the more I kind of really found myself appreciating what this film was, and certainly putting it in the context of the time. This is very early in film, very early in talkies.
Mm-hmm.
This is a bunch of performers who are very used to performing on stage in front of an audience, and now they are performing in front of just, you know, a group of men and women and cameras.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like this is almost like a really interesting snapshot of early cinema of this is how they were making movies.
They were just taking what was there and trying to translate it into film.
Yes. I mean, it is very much, as I've said repeatedly, the stage play recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is acting like it is that stage play. And so there are the asides, there are the little interludes with the music that have nothing to do with the plot or anything else. It's just simply there to showcase one of the brothers' talents.
Mm-hmm.
And it does. It feels like one of those live variety shows or something from like the even
like the Carol back, Burnett show.
Like the Carol Burnett show was just coming to mind.
Yes.
Where you have all this the silly skits and everything, but then they have a musical guest, so they're just gonna take a little break and they're gonna play their piano or their harp or their clarinet or whatever.
Yeah. The Muppet
and then
show
we'll have some more skits.
Yes.
And it very much feels that way. And then the historical significance of the fact that this is the first feature film of the brothers who would go on to inspire in just 100 years of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I think comedians today and filmmakers and writers, whether they're really writing for comedies or not and everything, are still going back to the Marx Brothers for inspiration at times.
Yeah.
So I think with all that, I will give it, I can't give it like something like a 5 because there is, I think sometimes the fact that it feels like a live performance that no one's getting quite right.
Hmm.
I think it does hinder it a little bit maybe. Easily a 4. And it makes me want to go watch the more well-known Marx Brothers films now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that has a lot going for it. It's a very, very strong 4, you know, with like a shade of 5 thrown in.
For the historical value.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. For me, it was really interesting watching this movie because, first of all, I actually did laugh out loud a few times when they launched into that last song, I Want My Shirt Back. I know I was just smiling ridiculously huge because I was like, this is so crazy over the top that it is. And this whole time I'm wondering, what is the point of this detective being here? I mean, are they just trying to add some tension? But he's not like a great actor or anything. And then he starts singing. And I went, is this guy actually like an opera singer? Like,
yes.
He has to have been. And so just that whole moment, I just was so floored that it just was mind blowing to me. And just in a moment in film that totally shocked me, which is so hard to do now. It's so hard to shock me in film.
I Want My Shirt to the tune of Carmen comes so far out of left field.
Yes.
Yeah, you can't help but kind of laugh and smile and shake your head all at the same time.
Yeah. Absolutely. And when he says, it was given to me by my brother Bert, I laughed out loud. I want my shirt. It was given to me by my brother Bert. And I was like, oh my gosh. It's so simple and so dumb and hilarious for that reason. But several times while watching this, I thought, I wonder what my husband would think. I'm going to have my husband watch this because there, time and time and time again, were lines that Groucho said that I was like, that sounds like something my husband would say. Not smiling. But what's really funny, so I said, I've got a movie for us to watch tonight. We sat down to watch it, and he said something. He's like, oh, yeah, Coconuts. And I was like, have you seen this? And he said, oh, yeah, it's been like 20 or 30 years, but I've seen it. This was the Marx Brothers were our niece's favorite movies, apparently.
Wow.
I never saw them, but it's, our niece on his side, she loved them. And so just tonight as we're talking, it clicked for me, all of the puns and jokes and little asides that my husband makes that occasionally make me just want to... we'll just say hug him. The euphemism would be, sure, we'll say it makes me want to hug. I just sometimes just, dad jokes, right? But it's so interesting then to know probably a lot of that humor comes from these movies. Mm-hmm. And so I'm with you. I can't give this film a 5. If it were just straight from the Carmen song for the shock factor, I absolutely would give it a 5. I don't think that from a practical standpoint, a 5 Othel movie. But you're exactly right. If you're, we like to say, if you're a completionist, if you're a Marx Brothers completionist, definitely watch this movie. I think, and I'm a little bit sad, I almost feel like we should have given a spoiler warning about a couple of things, because part of what makes it so funny is that you're not expecting it to happen. So when he eats the phone, you're not expecting him to take a bite out of the phone. And so I think you're right. I think it's a 4 Othel. In some ways I want to give it more, but I think that that's because my expectations were so low that that's skewing it higher than it really is. That said, if you're interested in early films, like this is a fun watch. If you haven't watched anything, if you like comedy, if you haven't watched anything this old ever or in a while, this is a great option. I think, like, we talk about Harold Lloyd, Safety Last. Man, if you're going to go watch a silent film, go watch Safety Last. But, you know, if you wanted to watch something early comedy, we've seen a number of movies that try to be as funny and shocking as this movie is and just don't quite make it. And I think this is a strong candidate for, hey, you know what? You want to watch a movie that just came out of copyright that you've probably never seen before? The caveat there being probably you want to watch the version that has the really good subtitles. The one that's on our channel, it's good. It's as clean of a version as you're going to get, but the subtitles are automatically generated, and so they are not great. Mm-hmm. So there, and it's the something, Classic Film Diary, I think is what, or Diaries is, I think, what it's called. So if you haven't seen it yet, go watch it with the subtitles. Those subtitles are clean. I think they were actually created specifically for this film, and I think they're very close to accurate.
They may have came off a disc or something like that.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think it's worth a watch. And I think for me, just to be able to keep up with the jokes, having the subtitles was really helpful, especially because, as Christopher mentioned, the quality isn't there on all of the clips. There's some fuzziness to some video, but the bigger problem to me is the audio issues. So it's worth a watch. I can't give it 5 Othels. I'd love to see it remastered. But now that it's out of copyright, I don't know that that'll happen. But Christopher's just shaking his head probably emphatically.
If Criterion hasn't gotten a hold of something like fair this enough by now, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. And it makes me really, really want to go. You said there, the two that Groucho said he thought were the best were Night at the Opera and A Day at the Races. And I repeated those to myself several times because now I want to go and watch them.
I kind of want to watch them all.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. After years and years of thinking, I don't really want to watch the Marx Brothers. Everybody's seen the Groucho gag, the big cigar and the mustache, you know, and I don't really want to see it. Now I'm thinking, oh, no, now that I know that these guys are so talented and that the humor is really very good, the wordplay is excellent. Sometimes it drags on a little long, but if this is any indication, it'll turn into something worth continuing to watch for. Then I think it's worth it. But I do want to go back and see some of their other ones, the ones that they liked especially, and see if maybe those turn out to be fives.
Yeah, I feel in the same way. The ones that everyone kind of puts is like, oh, that's the best.
Yes.
You know, this one's the greatest. This is the famous one. That's the one. Those are the ones. But now that I've seen the first one, I feel like I want to go in order and kind of watch the evolution.
Yes.
Of the family.
Yeah.
And because the ones that I mentioned, when they went to MGM, they apparently, the producers kind of forced them to kind of change slightly and kind of hone them a little bit and calm them down a little bit and actually put them actually as players of the plot versus just the characters that are popping up and doing this and that throughout like they are in this film.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I kind of just want to kind of see that evolution and then see that change. I don't want to jump directly into that after seeing this.
Yeah.
I kind of want to see some of the other ones they did for Paramount before they go to MGM.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, but I will definitely be looking for the films just from the library and checking them out or seeing if they're streaming somewhere or something. Because, now I am very curious.
Yes. Yeah, me as well. Definitely more than when we first walked into this movie. So that's four Othels from both of us.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, very, very strong recommendation.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not going to say this is the one movie you should watch out of all the movies we've ever reviewed. I think that still goes back to like Rain. I always go back to Rain. I'm sure there's others that would vie for that position, but this is worth it. And Rain's a heavy movie, so if you're looking for something fun, this is a good option.
Yeah, this is a nice, fun, light, and an enjoyable watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, then that will do it for this episode of Warfarin Entertainment. Thank you very much for listening. Again, if you have any thoughts or comments, send them to orphanedentertainment@gmail.com. Or send us or follow the link in the show notes to find all the social media sites. And of course, please subscribe to the YouTube channel where you can watch this film and many, many others.
And we're on Discord too, in case you guys aren't aware of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is in the link that if you follow in the show notes, there is a link there to the Discord server where you can join us. All right, that'll do it. Lydia, thank you very much. It's been a blast. Did I ever tell you you look like the Prince of Wales?
I look better.
All right. We'll talk to everyone next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Face hurts from smiling. Yeah. I usually smile when we're talking, but I don't think I smile quite this much.